Okay, so, like I said, before we talk Korach, we need to talk about something else. And that is Shalom. Shalom. What is Shalom?
Peace.
You know? Yeah, peace, right, very good. So, and Korach was a disruptor of Shalom. That was the big bad thing that Korach did. He disrupted the Shalom. But in a very serious way, which I don't think that we understand. First of all, we don't understand the greatness of Shalom, and therefore we don't understand how bad was the disruption of Shalom. But one thing that we can tell right off the bat is that Korach received a punishment that was unheard of. And as a matter of fact, Moshe asked that Korach receive an unheard of punishment. That he receive a punishment that didn't exist before. You know, he didn't just want Korach to like choke or something or fall off a cliff or get hit by lightning or something like that. He wanted something to happen to Korach that was a new creation. And in the end, actually did. It said the earth opened its mouth. Now, you'll say, well, what's so new about that? I mean, you know, we've heard of earthquakes, right? And the earth opens up sometimes, and people can fall in, you know. The
volcano explosion.
Yeah, right. These things happen. You know, I saw a picture of the when there was an earthquake in California, in San Francisco or Oakland or something, one of the bridges, you know, just broke, and a car, like, you know, a car was driving along, and
it was a sinkhole in downtown, in Midtown, up
there. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. So people can fall in there, and they fall in there, they're done for. So what was so special or different about this? So what was different here was, it says, if God the land, the earth opened its mouth. Well, you know there's something about open mouths? After a while, it closes. In this case, it opened, it swallowed Korach, and it closed. And when it closed...
But it closed, it took all of his followers.
Yeah, all of his followers, except for four people. So it took them all down, and then it closed. And when it closed, it's like it never was open. You know, it wasn't like, you know, it left behind some type of, you know, that you could see there was a fault and then it split and when, you know, no, nothing like that. It opened and it closed. Well, that never happened before. And I don't think it ever happened since. It was an entirely new issue. So, Moshe asked for that. Why did Moshe ask for that? Why did Moshe need that to happen? Why didn't Moshe just say, like Yahushua said, you know, Adoni Moshe Klaim, you know, wipe them out. Just get rid of them. You know, there were lots of other bad people. There were the spies we just read about in last week's Parsha. They all died. You know, they died in a pretty gruesome fashion. But, you know, people come and people go. But why is the Moshe didn't specifically ask that the spies should die in a way that no one's ever heard before? Right? Why specifically Korach? So, in order to understand that, we need to take a step back. And the step back is to Shalom. Shalom. And understand what Shalom is. Shalom is a very challenging concept. Shalom, we all know, Shalom means peace. Shalom comes from the word sholem, whole, complete. And we also know that Shalom is Hashem's name. It's very interesting that...
for Erev Shabbos too, Shalom Aleichem.
Right. Well, Shalom Aleichem, right, very good. So when the angels come, what do we say? We say to the angels when they come, Shalom Aleichem. Right? Everyone tells you, Shalom Aleichem. Okay, we say Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem. When you meet someone, Shalom Aleichem. Right? Or Boaz, the famous line from Boaz, says, Hashem Imachem, that Hashem is with you, may Hashem be with you. And he said, He came to his workers who were working in the field. He greeted them with the name of Hashem. And the Gemara says, from Boaz we learn that it is the way to greet someone with the name of Hashem. Now that seems a little bit cheap. You know how we are about the name of Hashem. You know, I've always pointed this out. We don't say Hashem's name, the four letter name.
But we say Shalom Aleichem. It's not mentioning actually God's name.
It is God's name.
But it's not Akra. It's like you have David.
Yeah.
Baruch Atah Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other.
Okay. So that's a different name of Hashem.
But
Shalom is one of Hashem's names. So how come it is that when we go and just casual conversation, you know, go to Israel, Shalom, 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 everyone's Shalom, everyone's Shaloming all over the place, and the guy says, Shalom, Shalom, bye. You know, that's how they do in Israel. Shalom, bye. Yeah. So what's with this Shalom? How did it turn out that we all greet each other with the name Shalom? And we're actually supposed to. The Gemara says we learn from Boaz that is the way to do it. The appropriate way is to greet someone with Hashem's name. And so much so that there is a halacha, actually, and it is inappropriate to extend shalom to someone in a dirty place. For example, in a bathhouse. Bathhouse people are unclothed, they're walking around, they're not dressed. You don't say shalom in a bathhouse. You don't say shalom in a mikvah, you know. You wouldn't say shalom in a filthy place if you're in a place where there's a lot of filth, garbage, manure, things like that. You don't say shalom in a place like that.
Pigsty.
What? Pigsty. Pigsty, yeah. Right. So you don't say shalom. Say hi. You know, how are you? You know. But
what are you doing in this filthy place?
Right. So you say hello, how are you, good day, good morning, all that type of stuff. But shalom, you wouldn't say. But how is it that it came about that we so bandy about Hashem's name? You know, we're so careful about Hashem's name. When we make whenever we say Baruch Atah, and we say Hashem. Now, I just said Hashem. Meaning the name. Blessed are you, the name. Don't say the name, but the name. Meaning, you know, like at this point, insert the name. So I say the name. So, you know, it starts off that there's Hashem's name. The Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey. And then we didn't want to say that name. So we instead started saying Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. Ado, and that's the name of God, the Master. So instead of saying Hashem Al Talad Nun Yud, we said the Master. But then we didn't even want to say the Master. So now we don't even say that. We say instead Hashem. We just say the name. So we're so careful that we don't even say the name that's in place of the name, but we instead just say the word the name. How is it that people walk around saying Shalom all the time? That's right. That's right. So it's very, very significant. You're not supposed to ascribe the name Shalom to someone else before you've checked in with Hashem. So if you meet someone walking into shul in the morning before you've davened, you don't say Shalom to them. But still, we do an awful lot of Shalom. So why is this? So this goes along, and I think the lesson can be learned from another Shalom, or name of Hashem. The famous, 2 weeks ago, in Parshas Naso, we read about the Sota. The Sota is the woman who has been alone in a closed place with another man, and there is suspicion that she that she was unfaithful to her husband. And by the way, her husband actually warned her in advance, don't be alone with this man. And she still was alone with that man. So there's a lot of suspicion. So what do? We, the witnesses that she was in there, they saw her walk in the room, they saw the door closed, they saw the lock locked. Put a little on the outside on the handles, the do not disturb. They hung a little do not disturb thing on the outside the door handle. The witnesses saw all of this, right? So the witnesses go to court. The court brings her in. And the part of the process of bringing her in is they take the portion of the Torah that talks about this whole episode and they scrape it off. They scrape it off into water, special spring water. They scrape the ink off of the parchment into the water, and she drinks the water. They also take a little bit of dirt from the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, they put it in there, and they mix it up, and she drinks the water. Okay. Now, in that parsha is Hashem's name. Hashem's name is in there. And in order to do this formula, you have to scrape Hashem's name off. You have to erase His name into the water. And that is a sin. We never ever erase Hashem's name. You're not allowed to erase Hashem's name. So here we're erasing Hashem's name. So the Gemara says, a famous lesson that we derive from this is that Hashem so much wants to bring about shalom bayis, to bring about peace between husband and wife, that he'll even allow his name to be erased. So, actually, I think it's the Maharal says that no, it's not that Hashem is allowing his name to be erased. It's not like he's saying, well, I'll put up with this. It's a hit I'm taking, but I'll do it because there's a higher purpose. No, it's really not true. What's happening here is Hashem is achieving His higher purpose. Because what is shalom? Shalom is shalem, whole. When people are at peace, they're whole with each other. And we don't just mean peace like truce, you know? Like right now in South Korea and North Korea, you could say they're at peace, but you would never say that. They're not at peace. They're just not killing each other at the moment. But they're pointing their guns at each other every second. They're getting ready to kill each other any moment, right? But they're not at peace. So peace is when you're living together in peace and harmony. You know, harmony is probably even a better word than peace. Harmony is closer to shalem, where the people are working harmoniously with each other. That's what shalom Hashem is. Now, how is it possible that people could work harmoniously together? How could that be?
If they're at peace, or with their harmony.
Yeah. So, you know, like I was just saying, I just said this in a class earlier today. Like, how is it really possible that a man and a woman could get along? I mean, by all rights, it's impossible. You know, she doesn't understand him. She doesn't feel him. She doesn't understand his emotions, mentality, or any of his physical experiences. Similarly, he doesn't understand her emotions, her mentality, or any of her physical sensations. You know, like how do men and women experience pain? Well, I don't know. I know how men experience pain. I don't know how women experience pain. And women don't know how men experience pain. Now, men know how men experience pain, and women know how women experience pain, but men don't know how women experience pain, and vice versa. And similarly, pleasure, and on and on and on and on. The differences are so drastic. How is it possible that these two so, so very different entities could actually work together harmoniously. And sometimes they do. Sometimes they do amazingly. They work together with tremendous harmony, synergy, create tremendous things, create people, you know, on and on. They can do amazing things. There's only one way you can do that. And this is the famous drasha that we've talked about. It's been quoted, you've heard it quoted many, many times. There are three partners in the creation of a man, and that is the father and the mother and Hashem. Meaning, it's only because there's a God in the world that he could take these two very, very different entities and work them together to create a harmony, to create shalom. So wherever you find opposites, disparate parts, acting as in a whole, acting in a integrated manner, acting harmoniously, you know that there has to be God there. There just has to be God. And that's why Hashem says, erase my name. You can erase my name. If the husband and wife, because of that, get back together and they develop harmony between each other and they function in a harmonious fashion, then they write my name. Then they're advertising my name. When you see a husband and a wife, that they get along well together, and they're accomplishing great things, then you're seeing an advertisement for Hashem. So Hashem says, go ahead, erase my name. The reason you're erasing my name is so that it will be written, but it'll be written much larger. Right now it's written on a little piece of parchment. I don't know how big, but I mean, can't be much more than about that big. Right? So erase that little name because it's going to be rewritten in a great big way, these two people. And so too it is when two Jews come together and two Jews make harmony with each other. And then maybe even three or four or five. Every time Jews come together and make harmony with each other, that writes Hashem's name. So therefore, when two Jews come together, it is only appropriate that they should say, Shalom. Shalom Aleichem. And everyone says, Aleichem, Shalom. Shalom to you. Shalom to you. To you, Shalom. That's how a Jew says, that's how a Jew responds. That the Shalom, if the way people meet each other and greet each other and attempt to build harmony with each other, that in that fashion, that's how they make shalom. That's where Hashem's name is written.
What if you're using it, you don't use shalom, but they'll say in their vernacular, how are you?
Right, right.
Is that similar to...
Or shalom, like goodbye.
But is that when you're greeting someone, but it's say in English instead of... Shalom, is that considered okay?
Yeah, so...
Does he still get...
We do, right. What we're saying when we say you meet someone, you say shalom. New person, you know them already. You know, I meet you, you're walking down the street, I'm walking the other way in the street, I say shalom. What does that mean? That means that there's godliness between us, and therefore we have a bond. That creates a bond. The godliness of shalom, that creates the bond between us. And the more there can be shalom in Israel, then the more that we magnify God's name. And if we can do it amongst more and more and more Jews, better it is. And that is why Moshe literally cast aside all of his honor, all of his position, everything, to try to create shalom. Because what happened? So, Moshe says to Dothan and Aviram. Okay, let's take a look. We'll look in the Parsha. Let's take a look. I'm going to need one of those. So Moshe gets in this quote. Well, Korach picks a fight with Moshe, basically. Okay? And Dothan and Aviram join in on the side of Korach. So Moshe's speaking to Korach and he's trying to calm him down, and that doesn't work. So they make up this decision. They're going to bring fire pans the next day. Now, it's in Bamidbar, the book of Numbers, which is the fourth book in the Torah. It's chapter 16, and you can tell which chapter it is. That's the bold number right by the binding. And it's in Pasuk 12. Bamidbar, chapter 16, Pasuk 12. So it says in Pasuk 12, Vayishlach Moshe likro l'dasan v'la'aviram b'nei Eliyav v'yomru lo na'ale. Moshe sent to call to Dothan and Aviram, sons of Eliyav, and they said, we're not going to go. And they went on to like really tell him off, you brought us out this land of milk and honey, Egypt, and now you think you're going to rule over us? You know, even if you poke at our eyes, he says in Pasuk 14, we're not coming. Moshe got very angry. And that's when he says to Hashem, you get all fed up. But before that, Moshe calls out to them. Now, why is Moshe calling out to them? So the Medrash, Rashi says, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, he says, because you're not supposed to get involved in a machlokas. Moshe went after them to try to make peace with them. He tried to make peace with them. Now, it turned out to be a total failure because these people were incorrigible and you couldn't make peace. But Moshe tried. Moshe tried, and he sent to them. Moshe shouldn't have had to send to them. You know, Moshe shouldn't have to go out of his way for them. If anything, they should come to him. But Moshe said he put aside his pride, and he put aside his position, and he went and he tried to make peace. Now, you see that sometimes it's impossible to make peace. Okay? As in the case of Dothan and Aviram. There are certain rotten people, and it is impossible to make peace. But you're supposed to try everything that you possibly can. So now, why is that? Because shalom is the essential harmony in the world that brings about godliness. So to have non-shalom, that is very, very serious. Now, let's flip over to the other side of the coin. What was Korach all about? Korach seems to be very non-shalom, anti-shalom.
Also, he was looking to take over Moshe's position.
Yes, he's looking to take over Moshe's position. Now,
Korach had one problem. He didn't realize Hashem is running the world.
Ah, okay. That's a very good point. He didn't realize Hashem's running the world. Now, let's think about that. If Hashem is running the world, think about this, is a very important point. It's not just that he didn't realize Hashem's running the world. If you don't realize Hashem's running the world, then you don't really understand what's going on in the world at all. Now, I'm sure Korach thought he understood the world, but he really didn't understand the world. Because if Hashem is running the world, Hashem put into this world you, and me. He put us all here, and a whole bunch of other people, like some, I don't know, I remember however many billion people there are on the planet, right?
But he was willing to go with Hashem. He and his people wanted to run.
They wanted to run the show, right? They wanted to run the show. But let's stop and think about it. If Hashem put all of us in this world, why did he do that?
To make this world a place for him to live.
Right, And that means that in order for this world to be a place for him to live, you need to be there. And so do you, and so do you, and so do I. Right? And if you're missing, it won't work. What's the proof? Because Hashem put you here. Right? You know, like if you have a crew on a boat, right? Or a team on the field, every person is supposed to be there. How do you know? Because they're there. I mean, otherwise, they wouldn't put them on there.
So even bad people are supposed to be here.
Okay, yes. Everyone is supposed to play a role. That's true. You know, one time they said, there's a famous story, they said to one of the greats, I don't know, it's something sticks in my mind that it was to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, but the Brisker Rav, I don't know. But they said, you say that everyone is, it's a big army, and everyone has their job. So he says, what about us, you know, who give up the Torah, we don't observe anything. So, you know, what's our role? So he said, every army has deserters. If you have an army, you have to say, did you ever hear of an army that someone wasn't deserting the army? So you're the deserters. And have to have all the parts have to be, all the positions have to be filled.
There's also another thing. Not yet have they started observing
the deserters. That's right. I mean, that's the real answer, but you know, he just wanted to. Yeah, that was just a joke, but that's the real answer. So Korach didn't realize this because they came up in front of Moshe and they said, they said like this, go right back to the beginning, just turn back a page or two, back to Pasuk 2. Vayakumu lifnei Moshe. They got up before Moshe. Va'anashim ibnei Yisrael chamishim ha'masayim. Korach, as well as the about 250 other Jews. And who are these 250? They were Nesi'e Edah, they were heads of the congregation, Kriye Moed, people who call meetings, Anshei Shem, outstanding people, people with names. Vayikalu, and they gathered together, Al Moshe ve'al Aaron. They all gathered together, they ganged up on Moshe and Aaron. Vayomru aleihem rav lechem. They said, you guys have enough. Ki chol ha'edah kulam kedoshim. The whole congregation is holy. Uvesocham Hashem, and in their midst is God. We don't believe in God, of course. Umadu atisnasu al kahal Hashem. How is it that you elevate yourself over the congregation of Hashem? What are they proposing?
To take over command.
That's probably what they wanted to do, but what are they proposing? What do they say? What's their complaint? They're really saying, not that they want to take over. Korach says, everyone is holy. Why do you lift yourself above the congregation of Hashem? Right? What does that mean? They're saying, no one's better than anyone else. Yes, comrade. Right? No, we're all equals.
But he's putting himself in charge.
Yeah, I know. That's obvious. Right, I know. Yes. Right? And we all know, like, you know, all animals are created equal. Like some are more equal than others. Okay? Everyone knows that. Okay. But they're all equal. That's the bottom line. They're all equal. Just some are more equal. Okay, so of course, and any time anyone is telling you equality and all that stuff, and everyone's equal, and you know whatever is, you know, as soon as they want to redistribute the wealth, take it away from some people and spread it out amongst all the other people, what they really want to do means they want to take it for themselves. Okay, but we all know that. But at least the claim. Korach's claim, let's just talk about that. Korach's claim is, why do you lord yourselves, make yourselves special above everyone else? Well, you know why Moshe did it?
He was told by
Hashem. Yeah, Hashem told him to. right? And how come Aaron's the Kohen Gadol? Hashem told him to. That's why. So Hashem sets up a world with his Moshe, and there's Aaron, and there's tribes, and the tribes have leaders, and they have family groups, and the family groups have leaders, and there's subgroups, and it goes all the way down, and there's everyone. And one guy's a water carrier, and one guy's the Kohen Gadol. And they all need to be there. But if you're saying that everyone is equal, then what you're doing is, you're going to create a perpetual situation of rivalry and strife in between everyone. Because now that everyone is equal, no one can appreciate that they have a role or they have a place. Right? If you have a role and you have a place, then you have an identity. And you're part of the team. And what makes the team go? So there's a big ship. So there's a captain in the front. And there's a guy down in the engine room. He's operating the engines. You know, the guy in the engine room, he never even sees the water. He's down there. He made, you know, in the old coal ships, you know, he goes off to sea. So for 3 weeks, all he's doing is shoveling coal into a big, huge oven. But you know what? The ship gets there because he's shoveling coal into that big, huge oven. In that big, gigantic furnace that he's throwing the coal in there. And that's essential. You need him and you need a captain. So everybody works together and they get there. Everybody works together and they get there. But the way Korach is proposing, and it always sounds so nice, we'll all be equal.
Korach had one other big problem.
Yeah.
His wife.
Yeah. Okay. So Korach's proposal is, but Korach's proposal means that the people can't work together in harmony. Right? Because let's just say, and this is what everyone thinks, by the way, you know, let's just say Congregation Ariel would go from being a congregation that has one rabbi and 180 members to a congregation that has 180 rabbis. Right? So, you know, if anyone walks out of the building on the first Shabbos without blood all over them, I would be surprised. Right? Because it doesn't work that way. You can't have it that way. It doesn't function. People have to realize, this guy's the rabbi, I'm this, he's that. And the same thing in families. There's a father, there's a mother. People play roles. We have role playing. On every team, there are roles. In every organization, there are roles. And in Klal Yisrael, their roles. Everybody is essential. Everybody has a place, but everybody also has a role. And when everyone has a role, then there's shalom. But the way Korach is proposing it, there would never ever be shalom. They couldn't have shalom. There would just be perpetual fighting and strife and arguing all of the time. So therefore, Korach needs to be eliminated. Very seriously needs to be eliminated in such a way that Moshe says, Hashem, you have to do this in such an unusual fashion that it will never, that everyone will realize that this is a direct act of God, that there cannot be any confusion. Maybe Korach all suddenly had a heart attack. Well, you know, sometimes people have heart attacks. You know, so they say, wow, it was an act of God. No, it was a heart attack. You know, it was an act of cholesterol, not heart attack, right? So Moshe says, no, do it in such a way that there is no question whatsoever, because he is getting right at the core of what it's all about. Now, in this parsha, we also find out about Aaron. And Aaron is the diametrically opposed to Korach. Aaron's the anti-Korach. Because Aaron, says the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom, he loves peace, he pursues peace. Ohev Asabrios, he loved people, Umakarvan LaTorah, and he brought them closer to Torah. So, and we hear the Midrashim tell us all these stories that Aaron used to find people that were arguing with each other, and he made Shalom between them, and he put them back together, and all that. So, Aaron understood. You would say, listen, said Aaron used to go out and he would find a husband and wife arguing with each other. He talked to her, and he talked to him. He to find two people are quarreling with each other. He talked to him. He talks to the other guy. Tries to bring them back together. Now, do you think Aaron's got time for this? Right? Aaron's got a base of Migdash to run. He's got korbanos that they have to be done by a certain time every day, and all these services, and you know, everything has to be sprinkled in just the right place and just the right time, and has to be done with a lot of thought and premeditation. So he can't just, like, you know, run in and do it. He's got to be there and get his head settled and get the right garments on, and everything has to be just right. So where does Aaron have time to be running around and talking to some guy that got in a fight with his friend? And Aaron's sitting there, well, come on, listen. He really feels bad. He wants to make shalom and all that stuff. Where's Aaron at the time? Aaron said, no, you don't get it. I'm not just making peace between people. I'm bringing out Hashem's name. Because when these two people come together, that makes Hashem's name. What's my job in the Beis Hamikdash? To make Hashem's name great. So I can do it. I can go in the supermarket also. Right? I don't have to go to the Beis Hamikdash always to make Hashem's name great. I'm doing the supermarket. What is a korban? A korban is an offering that brings people close to Hashem. But when two people come together, they have to become closer to Hashem, because, like we said before, it's only Hashem that can bring people together. Only Hashem that can harmonize people. So when Aaron brings people together, he feels absolutely comfortable taking away from his precious time, because he says, this is what I do. This is really where it's at. So the Chafetz Chaim says a great thing. Oh, so explain something to you that very much supports and really actually even expresses this idea. We know that Yaakov was fleeing from Esav, and he went to the place where the Beis Hamikdash is, and he laid down and he put rocks around his head. And we know that he was on his way after he left there to go to end up by Lavan, where he's going to get married and have his 12 children. He takes 12 stones and he puts them around his head. Put 12 stones around his head. So there's a Medrash which says a fascinating thing. The 12 stones were put around his head, under his head, and they all got in a big fight. Each one wanted to be the one that Tzaddik would put his head on. And they struggled so much that they fused together and they became one stone, and therefore his head was on all 12 of them. Okay, beautiful, very cute, nice medrash, great. Kids love it, Maradina teaches it, everyone's happy, they make little pictures of the 12 stones becoming one stone. It's beautiful. Okay, what does that mean? Now, you know Yaakov's going to go and he's going to have 12 children. What's the idea? You're going to have 12 children. If those 12 children can become one, then you got it. Right? Then everything is good. But if those 12 children are going to be 12 separate children, and they're going to be quarreling, and Yehuda hates Yosef, and they throw him into slavery and all that stuff, not good. That's never going to happen. And if the tribes quarrel with each other and they can't get along, no good. It's never going to happen. Only when they come together. So then Yaakov falls asleep. And he has a dream. And in the dream he sees a ladder. And the ladder is going, and on the ladder people are going up and down. Meaning they're going from this world up to heaven and coming back down. So a ladder, of course, has rungs. There's rungs in the ladder. 1, 2, 3, 4. If a ladder is missing a rung, many times you will not be able to climb up the ladder. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't get up the ladder. You have to have a rung there. You can't just like go skip, especially if it's a tall ladder. And you get near the top, you can't skip a rung. Too dangerous. Right? So the ladder has rungs. And the angels are going up and down on the ladder. What did Yaakov see? He said, this is the house of God. This is the gateway to heaven. So what Yaakov saw, all the different Sforim all say, and they all explain, Yaakov saw the world interacting with Hashem. So the way that I think it's the Mor v'Shemesh that quoted here by Rav Moshe Shapiro, the way the Mor v'Shemesh, and everything I'm telling you, it's all came from Rav Moshe Shapiro, the way that they are arrayed on the ladder, everyone is on one rung of the ladder. They saw this ladder. He didn't see the angels going up and down the ladder. What he saw was one person was on one rung, and one person on the next, one person on the next. And in a way, you could say they're like passing things up and passing things back down. That means everyone's going to be on a rung. Everyone has to be standing there. If one rung is missing, so one guy's handing it down or handing it up, but the other guy can't reach because he's too far up, the guy in the middle is missing. It won't go. They pass it up, and then, can't reach. And the other guy, can't reach. Reaching down, reaching up, can't reach. So this is what Yaakov saw. Yaakov saw the synergy, the harmony that comes about when all the people take their place on one rung in the ladder, then there is a harmony. And actually, this is a great way for us to achieve a certain harmony. You always have to remember that the other guy, who you wish would just drop dead and disappear and didn't exist, is also put here for a reason. At the same time, he's wishing you dropped dead and you didn't exist and you would just disappear. But you're here for a reason, he's here for a reason. Now, sometimes there's some real wicked people and they need to be gotten rid of, like Dustin and Avira. That happens, you know. But otherwise, the people are here. So, I'll read you a beautiful quote from the Chafetz Chaim.
So, one of Korach was eliminated if he was recording.
So Korach challenged the order. He basically gave up his life. He threw away his existence. Korach had a purpose. Korach had a wonderful purpose and he could have fulfilled it. But he went against the system. And he has to be obliterated. He has to be removed. Because he no longer was willing to occupy his place on the ladder. He wanted to take over the whole system.
So who can decide how bad the person should be to be eliminated?
So, if it all depends on, like, usually two people are arguing. This guy wants to be the boss over you. And you maybe want to be the boss over him. Or maybe you don't even want to be the boss over him. But one guy wants to be the boss. Okay. So, that doesn't necessarily attack the fundamental harmony of the world. But Korach, he went against the essential harmony of the world. Usually when two guys are arguing and sitting in the shul having a fight with each other, they're disrupting the harmony, but it's contained. But Korach was going after the essence of the system that Hashem placed in the world that there's no tolerance for.
He was going after Hashem directly.
Yeah.
Saying to Moshe, why was he better than him?
Right, right. See, he's denying the fact that Hashem created a system. Well, there's no room for that. So now listen to the words of the Chafetz Chaim. We'll conclude with this. The Chafetz Chaim says as follows. And similarly it is with every person. It is a mitzvah to make peace between two parties. For every person, not just Moshe, every single person. And it is one of the things that a person, if he does it, enjoys the fruit of it in this world, and the principle is left in place for him in the world to come. As it says in Peah, okay, fine. And even if a person sees that one of the sides is right. There's an argument. And it, you know, you look at it, you're an independent third party. And I hear this guy's his side, and I hear this guy his side. So, you know, I think this guy's right. Okay? And really, he's the troublemaker here. He should really be punished, because he's making the trouble. The other guy, you know, he started it. Not fair. This guy should be punished. The other guy's really not at fault. Now, they're arguing right now, but, I mean, it really was one guy's fault to start with. Nonetheless, a person should try to gird himself with as much power as he can to make shalom between the sides. Even though normally what we do is, you know, someone calls, oh, there's, you know, this is like, you know, someone tips, they tip off the rabbi. There's such and such a problem. You know, so-and-so's acting poorly. You know, then there's someone else tips off, so-and-so's acting poorly. So then you look into it, you think what you want to do is find out who's right and find out who's wrong. And then take sides. Get rid of the person who's wrong and go after the person, help the person who's right. Justice. He says, no. Gird yourself anyway. And don't be lazy. Even if the person who is wrong is very, very honorable in Israel. As we find. Even if you, the third party, are the most important person of all of Israel. As we see, Moshe got up and he went to Dothan and Aviram to try to make peace. Even Moshe, where there's no way in the world, why should Moshe have to lower himself to go crawling over to the tent of Dothan and Aviram and beg them to be peaceful? It's disgraceful. But Moshe did it. That's what we're supposed to do. The Amr Razal and our sages have said, Mikan she'in machzikin v'machlokas. From here, we learn that you don't take sides in a dispute. Visa b'medrash, and there's a medrash, it says, because Moshe went to the door of Dothan v'Aviram, he was rewarded. You know how he was rewarded? He saved four people. Four people. Three sons of Korach and On ben Peles, who would have otherwise died. But when Moshe went to Korach, they were so impressed. On ben Peles had his reasons, and the other three, they were so impressed with Moshe that they abandoned Korach's cause. So Moshe, by groveling like this before Dothan and Aviram, we say it's so embarrassing, he saved four people. And it says in Tehillim, Vake shalom radvehu. Seek peace and chase after it. V'yamr Chazal, Bakshehu lo'ohavcha. Look for it. Try to create it with those that you are in love with. Radfehu, chase after it. Imsonacha, with your enemy. You have to chase after peace. Bakshehu bimkomcha. Try to pursue it in your place. V'radfehu bimkomasachem. And chase after it in other places. Baksheu b'kuvcha, seek it in your body, radfeu b'mamoncha, and use your money to pursue it. Baksheu la'atzmacha, seek it for yourself, radfeu la'acherim, and chase after it for other people. Baksheu hayom, seek it today, radfeu la'machar, chase after it tomorrow. That's the medrash. What's the intention of this medrash? Today, tomorrow, right? Meaning, These are Chavetz Chaim's closing words. That he says, a person should never give up and never say, you know what? Those two people, they cannot be reconciled. It's impossible. They can't ever make peace. Don't give up. Pursue it. Seek it today. Pursue it tomorrow. Chase after it today and tomorrow. And the next day until you get it. That's what Chavetz Chaim says. That's what he learns from Moshe, and that's what we're supposed to do. The natural way, in my experience, is people look into this, I'm going to see who's right and who's wrong. As soon as they find out who's right and who's wrong, I mean, certainly, I'm not going to just like take sides. I'm looking into this, I'll investigate, but when I find out who's wrong, the person who's wrong will bear the brunt of the punishment. Right? That's not the Jewish way. Okay, shkach.